This week, Rob demands money from our listeners, and Ken reports Jerry for downloading bootleg movies. Welcome to the Midwest Peace Process.
Ladies and gentlemen,
I have the pleasure to present to you now.
The Midwest Peace Process.
The world is very different now.
The Midwest Peace
To remind
Process.
America of the fierce urgency of now. 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 Now.
All right, welcome back to the Midwest Peace Process. This is episode 9. I'm Jerry.
Ken. Rob.
And we are going to jump right into the lightning round this week.
We've lost all of our listeners.
We will do listener feedback.
Oh, okay. Good.
The lightning round kind of gets forgotten about, so we're going to do it up front. Get it out of the way, and then we'll move into other things.
Sounds good.
So what do you got, Ken?
Oh!
Do you want me to go first?
Yeah, please.
Okay. We had talked about Solyndra a week or two ago, probably. Maybe during our global warming episode. I don't remember.
Yeah, I think that was.
But I didn't get a chance to really delve into that. And I wanted to, just to talk about how that story has kind of highlighted the issues of government subsidies for companies. And one thing that I read recently, and I'll include a link to this in the show notes, but this was a essay by a columnist named Vin Soprinowitz, who's somebody I read every week. And he had interviewed somebody named Burton Folsom, who's a history professor, and he's author of a book called The Myth of the Robber Barons. Anyway, this Professor Folsom says, subsidies encourage bad investment behavior. And in the case of the airplane, we subsidized Samuel Langley. He flew two airplanes into the Potomac River, and he did it in front of reporters. Langley's mistake was that he did it in front of people, so that in the end, all he could say was, well, I don't have enough subsidy money. And 9 days later, two bicycle mechanics with $2,000 of their own capital flew their first airplane at Kitty Hawk. The subsidies encouraged inefficiencies, and Langley didn't have to be economical. He didn't have to watch the weight of his plane, because he figured that there would always be more subsidy money. Okay, so that's the first paragraph. Then he goes on to say, an even better example is to compare the subsidized transcontinental railroads with James J. Hill's non-subsidized Great Northern Railway. Look at the story of promoting the transcontinentals back in the 1860s and 1870s. They all went broke in the panic of 1893, and they cost a fortune. They cost the government hundreds of thousands of acres given away as checkerboard subsidies. And then you have the Great Northern with zero subsidies. Not only was it a good railroad, it was better built because the subsidies changed the way you build. If you're being paid by the mile, then you build lots of mileage, some over ground that is so poorly chosen that the rail later had to be torn up and relocated. Hill had to build an efficient line, so Hill tries to get the flattest grade he can through the Marias Pass, the same place that Lewis and Clark expedition went. In contrast, the subsidized railroads crossed the mountains on grades too steep for the engines of the day to haul freight, so that for a time the freight had to be portaged across the passes and reloaded on trains on the other side. The historical record is the subsidized companies fail. It is the non-subsidized companies that succeed. I know that was really long, but I thought it was interesting.
Thought-provoking. So why do we subsidize? Do we do it? Is it pure corruption? Like is it pure feeding the trough of your voters and constituents? There is is that the only motivation? Is there any honest motivation for such a thing?
I think there probably are people who believe they're doing it for the right reasons.
Yeah, or, I suspect so. I don't think it's all malicious. No,
I'd be hard pressed to point to any success stories there either. So, you know, the ones you typically hear about are the ones that blow up, like the Solyndra one.
And right.
It, you know, the corruption then becomes obvious.
I mean, I wouldn't say subsidies flat out do not ever work. Do they work as well as something else would work? I don't know. But we've gotten good things out of subsidizing stuff. I just don't know that makes it okay to do it. The end doesn't always justify the means, I guess, in my eyes.
Right.
Because you favor a more natural solution.
Yeah, right. I mean, obviously everyone having health care is good, right? I mean, there's not anybody that would stand up and say, I want people to not have health care.
Nobody would say that.
That's what the debate turns into, but that's stupid. Clearly that's not what you're debating about. You're debating about the role of government in that, but it turns very silly very quickly, you know, away from that. I think that just because you say government shouldn't do something doesn't mean you think that something shouldn't be done. It's a matter of how should it be done.
Oh, that's fair enough. Yeah, I mean, I don't want this. I think the urge to subsidize something must be obviously a non-market goal. Like, you're not trying to create the most money for that company. You're trying to do something else. I'm sure with the Solyndra thing, it was somehow to kickstart the green economy or something. I mean, that
but was there is the there is some cronyism going on there,
right?
Sure,
right.
I mean, you can't look at the Solyndra thing and not see just how dirty that whole thing is. Now, if it had turned out fine, you would have never known about the dirtiness of it because it would have worked and people would have been puffing their chest out. But when it doesn't work is when all that comes to light.
And I don't know how much you've read recently, but it's come out that one of the lawyers involved, I don't know if he works for OMB or if he's a Department of Energy guy. Anyway, he was the guy that was sending all the nasty emails saying, hey, why is this taking so long? Why haven't you approved the Solyndra loan? And it turns out that his wife worked for Solyndra or worked for some other company that did business with Solyndra. She had some kind of connection with Solyndra. Right. So there was a, you know, appearance of impropriety there.
That's shocking.
Yeah, right.
I mean, especially in such a transparent and open administration that was going to change the culture in Washington. I'm just amazed.
That was more of the hope part, not the change part.
Yeah.
I mean,
we're going to change who we are corrupt with, but we're still going to be corrupt.
We hope for change, but we didn't get it.
Yeah,
sorry
about that.
I mean, I'm not defending the subsidies. I mean, it's interesting to contrast that with our military industrial complex as well. Our military industrial congressional complex.
There you go. Thank you.
Said,
yes.
You know, like I think the same claims are made, but in a different kind of flavor of military contracts or Halliburton or Brown and Root or whatever it is.
Sure.
You know, so which I mean, how does that play out? They say, oh, we need a service. This contractor has a service. Give a sole source. Mm-hmm. Pay him a bunch of money, you know.
Oh, so, yeah. It's just as dirty.
Right.
Yeah. No question.
But like I said before, I mean, Solyndra sounds so nice. Such a nice, calming, sunshiny corruption.
And how is the Obama administration handling the scandal, Jerry, with what you've read?
Oh, I don't know specifically what they're doing. I think they're trying to distance themselves from it as much as possible.
Yeah.
But
not that I would expect them to embrace it. I mean, you know, like, come on, yeah, okay, we did it. We're a bunch of bastards. But
right.
It's just very funny that the whole lead up to this election was all about this kind of stuff, right?
Right.
Right.
And the lack of this under an Obama administration, and you find out it's all the same. So
I wonder what fraction of Obama voters believe the transparency in Washington, the change the culture.
Well, and I think I pointed this out in a previous episode when we talked about this, but you know, the scary part is this is just one loan out of, you know, a $30 billion pot of money that they have to loan out to all these startups and green technology companies. So we very well could go through this many more times.
Right. And I had read an article that Solyndra was on the list to get another loan here in the not too distant future. They were signed up to get more money if they had been able to stick it out. So I don't think they were done getting money from this program. They just blew up before any of that could happen. So
right. So it just kicked out one more panel.
Yeah.
So maybe the free market worked, right? They couldn't create their thing. They blew up.
But it's not the free market at work because they got
closed.
A buttload of money.
Well, it would have been the free market if that money had come from a private venture capital company or something. But, you know, the fact that, you know, what's at stake here now is that there were other private investors in the company.
Sure.
And when, you know, when they go bankrupt and they go into bankruptcy, those creditors are going to get paid off first before the, you know, the loan from the government. So the taxpayers are going to, you know, get screwed.
Yeah.
And that's the issue right now about whether or not it was even legal for them to do it the way they did it, because it's structured in such a way that, you know, all the private investors are going to get theirs first. And if there's anything left over, then they'll pay the government back.
Right, because I think that has to do with the level of investor you are, I think. Isn't that how that works? Like if you're a premier investor and you kind of pay in a certain amount, then
it's like donating to PBS?
Is it that is. How this it works? Is like that, I think.
If you get a brick with your name on it, you're a...
It's true. It's true. I'll have to look it up. I believe you. You got to...
Sounds like being a booster for a college or something.
It is like that. And then that ensures that when it goes belly up, that you're the first one that gets the bankruptcy money.
Yeah, if you invest at the platinum level.
That's right.
Right.
Got my frequent investor card, my frequent failed companies card. That just seems, well, I guess there's got to be a hierarchy to it, so it's got to work somehow. Interesting. I just wonder how many more companies are going to, you know, take the money and run type of thing, because when you're in control of that much money, it's, you know, it's far too much temptation for a person or a handful of people to not let personal biases creep into what they do. I don't think it's possible.
Right.
You know, it doesn't make them bad people. I guess you could argue it does. It just makes them people. So when you have that much control, you're going to eventually cave and do something bad. You might even think it's good. You might even convince yourself it's good. You've known these people forever. They're smart. They've been business savvy. Yeah, they'll make this work. They don't. So.
Well, and it just makes you wonder, too, like, was this deliberate? Because in a business like making solar cells, there's obviously demand for that product. So the fact that you couldn't make this work with $500 million in capital.
It's a lot of money.
Yeah, I mean.
But you don't need to make it work.
It's almost like. Yeah, they knew from the get-go that they weren't going to, you know, they weren't actually going to try to make a run at this thing. They were just in it to make a few bucks and bail.
Yeah.
Or maybe just the business wasn't set up in a way that would make it successful, which maybe private investors could sniff out, but the government says, I'm in
the government doesn't sniff as hard.
Right.
Especially when there's political hay to be made. I mean.
Right.
You know, nobody can deny that this was a showpiece for Obama, and you know, it wasn't just Obama. The story I read said that even who was it? I can't remember the name now. One of the members of Congress from California was you know, crowing about this company too.
Yeah. Wonder what they're saying now. Probably nothing. They're probably eerily silent.
Too much agreement on this issue.
Yeah, well,
we agree, but we should be on the lookout for this sort of thing in all its forms, I think.
Well, I wonder how many more will come out. You know, now that that's out there, you know, there's going to be people digging, right? I mean, the Republicans are going to be just clamoring for anything like this that they can latch onto to expose the stimulus for what, you know, some people believe it is. So, I suspect there's more examples to be had.
And I should warn you that the word stimulus is going to be a key word
in the election.
Basically everything is going to be called the stimulus, even when it wasn't the stimulus.
Yeah, because it evokes negative connotations at this point.
Exactly.
So, right.
So get used to being stimulated.
That would, well, I could get used to that, but I don't watch, I won't watch the news, so I won't get buzzword bingoed to death because I just won't listen. So,
wise man.
I wouldn't say that, but I'll save myself some blood pressure issues, so that'll be good. Like, have you been watching any of the recent debates, the Republican debates?
I have not watched the recent ones, no.
Okay, so you don't know anything about this Kane dude. I'm intrigued by the Kane. I don't even know who this guy is, and all of a sudden he's, you know, all the rage. And when I've heard him talk, he sounds like somebody they pulled off the street and just threw a suit on him, and he just, like, says stuff, and it doesn't make any sense. But somehow he's all of a sudden in the mix. I don't get it.
He's a former head of the Federal Reserve Bank of Kansas City, former CEO of Godfather's Pizza.
I don't have facts to back this up.
And he won the Florida straw poll,
right,
2 weeks ago, which, you know, really put him on the map, because up to that point, I don't think anybody had even heard of him.
I've just never seen a straw poll put anybody on any map before, and all of a sudden this guy's jumping up in the polls, and
right. Yeah.
He's got catchy slogans that don't make any sense, and he's got some tax plan that sounds completely ridiculous. And
well, I don't know that it's completely ridiculous, but it's taxation, so it's, you know, it really doesn't matter how you dress it up.
It's, you're saying by definition it's ridiculous, so
yeah.
Wow. I
taxation is theft, but so it is.
Right.
I think it's flavor of the month a little bit. Of a,
you think?
I think there was Bachman was all that, and then
yeah, but
like,
she was never all that. Well, she was even all after that. When she won that Iowa straw poll, nothing happened. She went poof very quickly. The left got all bent out of shape about, oh my god, this Bachman thing is going to happen, and she's just imploded. So that, I didn't think that straw poll did anything for her.
Well, it got her all the pub for those 2 weeks. She didn't do anything with it because failed at the debates.
Did she? Okay, well, I haven't watched that. So, did she talk?
She, yes.
Yeah, see, that's the problem.
And then I think, you know, then it was, oh, yay, we got Rick Perry in there, and then he's kind of fallen off the map. And now, and then it was like, oh, we need Chris Christie. I think everybody's trying to find the not Romney, basically. So we're just marching through all the not Romneys.
Until we eliminate all of them and we end up with Romney, which is what's going to happen, but that's okay. Yeah, I wonder, too, when these people, quote-unquote, fail. Like, if you really follow primary politics, the whole thing, I mean, who really determines who fails and who succeeds? Do you think the Joe average voter knows that Bachman failed at the debates, or do you think they just go with whatever they're kind of fed?
I think so. I think it's all jockeying for position. It's like the baseball season. Like, nobody cares what happens in, you know, on June 1st, but all those games count up, and it gets you in position for when the primaries really happen.
I mean, only what, half of our eligible voters vote anyway in general elections that right. involve a presidential election. So what percentage of those people pay attention or vote in a primary?
Well,
it's got to be minuscule.
Even worse than a straw poll.
Yeah,
like have you ever voted in one?
I don't even know where one would do such a thing. I have no idea.
Well, the straw poll's kind of bogus anyway, because it really is a publicity stunt. I mean,
but so are caucuses, right? I mean,
they're actually paying people to vote in the straw poll.
Better. Oh yeah, so, and you get some free barbecue.
Yeah, I mean,
it's like going to a subdivision opening.
Yeah.
Hey, you want to vote? Here's a hot dog and some cotton candy. We got some face painting for the kids and some balloon animals.
Exactly. That's how it is.
And, shit, oh, I got to go to one then. Let's go. Where's the next one?
Duck into that tent over there and vote while you're at it.
But the media loves it. I mean, we need something to score, right?
Well, they do. It's like I'll equate it to like an NFL mock draft. You know, it's just so ridiculous. But we have nothing else to talk about, you know, so we're going to make this into news. Okay.
Right.
Well, money's getting spent.
He projects this guy to be the number 6 overall pick. Who cares? Why don't we wait for the draft? Oh, no. We have to make a story here.
Yeah.
And I felt that way about the Bachman thing because it's funny. I'm friends with several people who are, you know, loony left people. Hate those guys. But they were just very worried when Bachman won that straw poll. Like, it was this might be a done deal that she is going to get the nomination. Oh, my gosh. It's time to press the panic button. I thought, man, this is a bit too early to be worrying about something like that. Whoever's in the lead is never the one that wins, right? Until the very end. I mean, at the beginning, that person is never going to be the person that makes it.
Yeah, and everybody seems invincible at some point.
At some point.
There was always a point.
And that's what I'm wondering is, when does that turn? So you come out of this Florida straw poll. Kane is getting his 15 minutes. When does that turn? Does that turn because the people who are getting paid to get balloon animals and go vote in the tent while they're eating a hot dog suddenly change their mind about Kane? Or do they get fed what they are supposed to think about Kane so that it turns? You know, I guess I don't know enough about who pays attention to these things to really develop that opinion. I mean, have you ever sat there and thought something about a political candidate and the next day all of a sudden thought, I'm going to change my mind about that candidate?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, yeah, how do you really run so hot and cold on these
silly
people?
Well, even right. Like polls, you read about them in 53% approval rating, and last week it was 57. And well, who are those 4% of the people that last week they're like, yeah, he's doing great. Yeah, not so much this week. You know, mm-hmm. He really is bad. I just don't know who does that.
I have to believe that the media is to blame for some of that.
That's what I think as well. That's where I was going.
Because the media is not a mirror. I mean, they are not reflecting what's actually happening. They're selectively reflecting, you know, the details that they want you to know or that.
Well, it makes a good story. I mean, I don't know if I'd go so far as to say they have an agenda, although I certainly think in some cases they do. But, yeah, I think they're constructing a reality that's conducive to them reporting the news, you know.
Yeah.
If you can build somebody up and then tear them down, man, that's you can get a lot of mileage out of that. Maybe later you can build them back up again. You know, I mean, there's all kinds of storylines there.
Right, because America loves a comeback.
All right. And a fall from grace. You know, that's two things we'll pay attention to. So, I don't know.
Yeah, so
every time I've heard this Kane guy talk, I just kind of like, wow, really? Okay.
I honestly haven't heard him talk. I've read the reviews of previous debates, and specifically the one where he talked the most about his 999 tax
the
plan.
Pizza box.
Yeah. $5.
Right. And I have to laugh because I'm falling into the exact trap that I'm talking about, right? I'm regurgitating what the media has told me because I haven't taken the time to pay any attention to this because I know whatever happens now is irrelevant because I'm not going to go vote. They're never going to get my opinion until the general election.
And why did they come up with a 999 plan? So it was easy to say. So you get to talk about it on a podcast.
It's very soundbite.
Well, exactly. That was brilliant on Kane's campaign manager's part.
Right.
To say, hey, we need something catchy. We what was that thing you used to do at Godfather's and the $9.99 pizzas? Let's do that.
Yeah, right. It worked then.
Because that's going to stick in people's minds.
But then you got, you know, the other candidates, of course, they can't just come up with their own or ignore it. They've got to, like, put a play on that, you know. So now you got one of them saying, well, turn that upside down, and what does it make? You know, really?
Somebody said that?
I think, I read that. Let me poke around a little bit here. Yes, I read that. I think I know who it was, and I want to make sure before I say something.
Well, Mitt Romney's got the 59-point economic plan, so he's got like 50 more points.
That's got to be better.
It's got to be.
I like the number 59. Oh, I think
this
that's
is beautiful.
Sweet.
All right, let me read this. This is so bad. I'm almost embarrassed that I knew this. It's our favorite friend, the Bachman.
She has no shame.
Yeah.
Or no brain. I can't figure out which.
Michelle Bachman, asked to respond to the 999 plan, said, and I quote, "The 999 plan isn't a jobs plan. It is a tax plan. When you take the 999 plan and turn it upside down, I think the devil's in the details." That's very clever.
It's not, though.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, so I mean, so now they've like
framed
this 10 whole
seconds
conversation.
On the news, though.
Yeah, right. And now they're all going to sit there and like make little pokey comments at the 999 plan. Oh, pizza box. Oh, 666 upside down.
There's something about the Bachman and the Perry that like just rubs me the wrong way about just being like a little bit too mean. You know, that was just a little mean, I think, with the devil in the details. You know, just trash the plan. You don't have to bring the devil into it.
Or eat a corn dog.
Right. Can we have that picture back from the podcast?
You don't have to be invoking demons in your...
Right. Right. And yeah, she does the same thing against, you know, Obama and any other person. Like, she'll talk for 5 minutes just completely trashing the ideas and the plan and the record. I'm like, hey, good job. You know, you're really bringing it. And then, like, something will come out right at the very end. She's like, oh, that's just mean.
Yeah.
Kind of mean. Palin does that, too. But people love it.
Some people do. I don't get the Palin thing. But she's not running.
Are you sad she's not running?
Heartbroken? It would be
entertainment value. Yeah.
I think she knows. She's like the backup quarterback, and as long as she stays the backup, people will be clamoring for her.
Right.
I'm reminded a little bit of who is the dude who the senator from Tennessee who was on Law and Order or something last time.
Fred Thompson.
Yeah, you know, he was just that guy was going to come in and clean house. There's a straight talking, straight shooting, down home. And he came in and just, it was like, dude, you were way better off just being the backup quarterback. People would have loved you, but then you got in there and it was,
So why is it so hard to find a good candidate? Why is there so much clamoring? Is there just nobody on the bench or what? And how hard is it? I mean,
it's pretty hard.
How is it hard?
Because
I don't understand why it's so hard.
Because the people who would actually be good at the job
don't want it.
Yeah, they know better.
That's right. Is it the mix of the kind of the public relations part of the job, which is,
well,
seems 90%.
If you get to
that
point, you've got a history, and if you have a history, you're vulnerable. I think that was one of Obama's advantages: is he didn't have a long enough resume to have a lot of history.
Right.
You know, he could do his rhetoric, and he could, you know, spew his hope and change thing. And what are you going to say to that?
Right.
It sounded good. It was timely. It was topical. People loved it, and there was nothing you could point to other than to say he hasn't done a lot, which then you were a racist. So I mean, it was true. Tell me that didn't happen. It happened.
I think one thing that
all you want, but if you attacked the Obama about his record, you were a racist.
Oh geez,
it was said.
I think it was not said. I think
am I wrong? Am I going into right?
Well, people say stupid stuff all the time. I mean, I don't think that was a pattern, or I mean, it was a valid criticism.
That's a valid my criticism or me being a racist, which was valid. I got lost there for a second.
It's valid to question the record. I think one thing that helped him was I think. Talking about records, like I think when Hillary was in the lead there, boy, the right wing had their three ring binders off the third shelf, you know, pulled them out, and they're like, let's see what we got, and they're you know, licking their chops on all
you know
the
they were pulling
dirt.
For the Hillary they wanted
they had like a full arsenal aimed that way, and they're like, wait, this guy's gonna win. Bill Ayers. What?
And in all honesty, and I'm gonna be mean, but attacking an Obama is a very tricky thing to do. Right. I mean, can we agree on that? Whether you want to play the race card or not, there's a certain problem there that if you go about it the wrong way, you're going to look a lot worse.
Right. And I think that's not that's to his credit. I think he does well. By who he is and whatever his background is, it seems like he's easy to attack that way, but he's actually not very easy to attack.
I would agree with that.
And he doesn't bite on some of the things that they want him to bite on that you would think he would. And so he's really tough. He's really tough to pin down that way.
Yep.
But where were we going with all this?
We're going all over the place.
It's lightning.
Wonderful. It is. It's the lightning round. So Kane is going to falter. That's you say that will turn?
Yes.
Okay.
Right. Oh yeah, he's. I mean, I'm utterly flabbergasted.
That they're talking
about him as a top tier candidate. You know, I heard people saying that in the last week or so that he's now top tier. I'm like, really? There's no way. I mean, if Ron Paul is not top tier, then Herman Cain doesn't have a prayer.
Right. You wonder if the press isn't like laughing in the back, you know, in the back room.
Well, yeah, exactly. And that's what I started to say before.
Great. We're going to just tear this guy apart.
Yeah, it's almost like they are setting him up for the fall.
Right.
Kind of like what you said before, that, you know, they can build him up so that they can tear him down and just milk it for as much as it's worth ratings wise.
He's going to be Milli Vanilli in 4 weeks.
Blame it on the rain.
I don't know which. I don't know if he's Milli or Vanilli, but he's going to be one of those two. And he's not going to. He's like the dude that gets caught up, and all of a sudden he's way above his station, you know. And he's probably more surprised than anybody, you know. You wake up one morning, and all of a sudden he's relevant. And he's going to start buying into it, and then that's when the hammer is going to drop. It'll be fun to watch. You heard it here first.
Okay, we're going to take a little break, and when we come back, we will jump into some listener feedback. Ready to talk to our listeners, because we love our listeners.
We do.
I want to take my shoes off, change them, put a sweater on.
Like Mr. Rogers' show.
Mm-hmm.
What you're referencing?
I am indeed. Not very well, but that's what I was aiming for.
It's a beautiful day in the Midwest.
It is.
With a mailman named Mr. McFeely. That's just not right.
No, it's not. So,
and I'd like to thank Jerry for collecting our user listener feedback, because I don't. I read it and then I don't print it out, even though I mean to.
Well, I don't mind. So, and I'm not even sure I collected all of it this week.
Ah.
We don't have as much as we have in weeks past. So let's start with Eric's comment. He says, last point about the volcanic CO2 thing. Jerry, you were the one that made the initial statement about Pinatubo based on some news story you heard a while back. I haven't seen any support of that claim. Can you please provide it so that we can compare my references to yours? Okay, my response is that's fair. I wish more people would question the appeal to authority, because I do. But what if the entire debate is based on a similar house of cards, right? I mean, repeat a lie often enough and it becomes the truth. And I'm not saying that's the case here, but I think there are enough stories of dubious scientific credence that, you know, maybe have achieved urban legend status. And I don't believe that people who consider themselves legitimate climate scientists would base a career on those stories or anything, but they sure aren't doing a very good job of getting the truth out there and combating those urban legends. And I think that's my biggest beef right now with the environmental movement today. I consider myself an environmentalist. I mean, there are issues there that appeal to me and that have changed the way I live my life. But at the same time, you know, I feel like there's too many of these weird things going on that the environmentalist camp they either don't respond to it, like they think it's going to go away on its own, but hello, we have the internet, nothing goes away, or they don't respond in a significant way, and that just kind of perpetuates the myths that are building up out there.
Is that the scientist's fault, though, or is that the people in between, you know, that report and that frame the argument.
I don't know, but I think I would point to like the realclimate.org site that we referenced last week or the week before.
Yeah.
I think that is a really good venue for scientists to kind of address these issues, you know, and cut out that middleman that we're talking about. You know, they don't have to go through the media. They can go directly to the people. And I'll confess that I don't spend any time reading that site. It's not, you know, it's not something that I go to on a regular basis. So maybe some of these answers are already out there and I just haven't read them.
I think Eric would tell you they are.
That could very well be.
But when you rely on other people to, you know, to report that to you, you're going to get a different spin on it. Yeah, I mean, scientists aren't PR people. They aren't media people, so they're not, you know, they probably don't know or care how to do that. They just do the science.
Right.
And that's not going to get to you raw and unfiltered. And quite frankly, if it was raw and unfiltered, you wouldn't want to hear it anyway, right?
And as we talked just on the last topic, what are politicians great at or political organizations great at? It's PR. It's getting messages out there in a soundbitey way, so...
They have really wide stances, too.
Mm.
So Eric also revisited the...
Touch that.
Yeah.
Moving right along. Eric revisited the Google thing, and he just said that the free market didn't weed out anything in the Google case. And I guess at this point I would say that this is probably not the best example, because after all, Google is free, right? So you get what you pay for.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It would definitely be different. I can say this categorically. It would definitely be different if Google was charging for its search results. There would be plenty of people out there questioning the quality of Google's search results, and they would have to respond to that.
Yeah.
But the fact that they're giving them away for free... I mean, anybody that's seriously going to challenge them on the legitimacy or the ethics or whatever of their search results, in the end, they're just going to go, well, what are you complaining about? It's free.
Right.
If you don't like it, go someplace else.
And I don't think the automatic answer to anybody doing anything that's corrupt or untoward is that everybody has to abandon them. I think everybody's got their own level that they'll accept and not accept. And in this case, it wasn't enough to... stem the tide. I'm sure there's more than one person that did stop using Google because they were annoyed by this. Well, good for them. So
I'm willing to talk more about, you know, how the free market would self-regulate in other cases other than this Google one, because I don't think that's a very good example.
Yeah. I think Eric's point is the same thing would happen under, you know, even if you take an example that maybe is more relevant, every company is going to have issues, you know. So you may drink Coke or you may drink Pepsi, and you may have some altruistic reason why you do that, but other people are going to have different reasons or aren't going to care about, you know, that one contributes more to charity than the other or, you know, whatever.
Right.
I don't know. It's not going to be perfect no matter what. So I don't think a free market solves that problem. It just gives a different game space for that to exist in.
Well, it solves it to the extent that everybody gets to decide for themselves.
Yeah.
You know, rather than trying to create this referee for a game that is just way too complex for any referee to be able to to control, just, you know, let everybody take care of themselves. And
right, that if you provide a service and someone has an outcry and says it's outrageous of what that service is doing, but nobody really cares and keeps using the service, is it really outrageous? Is it really worth the outcry? You know, if people keep doing the same thing.
In the case of the Google thing, I have to laugh. I saw a cartoon when people were complaining about, you know, all the Facebook changes that have happened recently. You know, the whole homepage thing has changed. People are just up in arms, you know, just, oh,
yeah.
How dare they change this, you know, make them change it back, you know. And somebody had a comic up, and it said basically, beware, you know, that sometimes you are not the consumer, you are the product. And it showed two pigs in a barn, and one pig was saying to the other pig, this place is great. The barn is warm, the straw is fresh, and the food is free.
Right.
just made me laugh. It's like, you know, they got a point. I mean, they're selling you. They're not selling you Facebook because you're not paying for it.
Exactly.
Right. And Google's the same way, right?
Right.
That's a good one. I like that.
Any other listener feedback that you guys want to talk about?
I read it all. Don't have any written down here.
I got yelled at for talking over the moment of silence for Steve Jobs. I want to apologize to his family. I'm sure they're listening. I'm very sorry for your loss.
Oh, man.
You've made it up.
Any other? I don't think so.
Okay. Without further ado, let's roll into the main event.
Let's do it.
This is going to be a 2-1.
Probably.
I don't know what it is. I don't know what I think.
Yeah, that's a shocker.
Mm-hmm.
Well, for our listeners' benefit, let's point out that our topic this week is intellectual property.
Yes, it is.
We're going to talk about how we currently protect intellectual property in this country and the flaws in that.
Wait, there's flaws in it?
I would agree with that. I'll go with flaws. I don't think the flaw's in the premise, though, but that's okay.
All right, let's hear it, Jerry.
Well, okay. And I think we can say up front that I'm alone in my views on this, that you two don't agree. But I let me just preface this by saying that every discussion that I've ever had about this topic, invariably it ends with a talk about our justice system. And So I wanted to preface this by outlining my concept of what a justice system is or what it should be. And I believe that justice is served when the victim is made whole to the fullest extent possible. Now, obviously, there are cases where that can't be done, like murder, for instance. You can't bring somebody back to life. But in other words, justice is about making it so that the injury never occurred, if possible, by compensating the victim. And that justice is never about revenge or punishment. Okay, so those are my views on the justice system, and they kind of inform my feelings on intellectual property, because I believe that it's a victimless crime. I don't believe that there is a victim in, you know, software piracy or copying music, downloading MP3s, movies, what have you. I don't believe that any of that causes harm to anyone else. So that's where I'm coming from on the intellectual property debate. Now, what do you guys think?
All right, go, Ken.
Oh, sure. While I will agree that our justice system certainly has its issues, and I think we can quibble about how the cottage industry built up around intellectual property is constructed, and it is a construct. I mean, it's an artificial construct.
Yes.
I think that's true. But I like the concept of the artificial construct, and I will give, I'll give one example right away, and I'm sure there'll be more to come later. But one thing I like about the intellectual property idea is it gives power of idea to people that otherwise have no power. So that is, if I have an idea for an invention, but I do not have the wherewithal to bring that invention to market, or I don't know how to do manufacturing. I don't know how to mass produce something, or how to go buy, you know, 5,000 million pounds of styrene to make something. I can have that idea, though, and I can bring it to the people that have capital and have the ability to do those things, and we can all make money. And I think otherwise, if I had an idea, all it would do was be an idea that for free goes to someone that already has money and can take that idea and bring it to market and leave me in the dust. So the incentive to come up with an idea becomes greater when the people who don't necessarily know how to implement that idea can make money off of that, can get involved in the market and then be able to have more ideas, because maybe that's what they do well.
Because people with money aren't great at ideas.
Not always, no. I think it would, yeah. And I think it's, I think it's a great leveler of the playing field when it comes to that.
And sound I think like it's socialist.
Well,
like, why isn't it more free market? What if someone said, "Hey, Ken, you're not being very free market about that."
I think it is a free market. Right? You got to be the first one to come up with the idea, though, and patent it or do whatever it is you do. How's that not free?
But if you have the power to, someone could say, not me, but if you have the power to take someone's idea and make money off it, what should stop you? Why should there be a government?
Nothing would stop you. You just have to pay them something for their idea. And again, I fully admit that what I'm saying is completely artificial, made up, invented to fit with, you know, how someone envisioned this thing to work, and it's not real other than in the eyes of the very justice system that you know Jerry is railing on a little bit here. So I mean, there's a whole market built up around patenting and staking claim on ideas, and you know, there's companies that don't do anything with those ideas other than wait for somebody to infringe on their copyright or on their patent or whatever, so they can go, you know, if you want to say extort, you know, go to that person and say, "Hey, I had this idea already, and you can use it, but you're going to pay me something—a licensing fee or a one-time fee for, you know, that goes on." So, I mean, there's corruption or fringy silliness that goes on there, but I don't believe the whole system, at its core, is wrong.
Right, and I guess the question was how is it different from stealing anything else other than the fact that it's not a physical good? Like, if I'm selling, it's all about the physical. Like, yeah, because if I'm selling lemonade and you come and take my lemonade and then you sell it and make money off it, that seems like theft. We'll go ahead and call that theft.
Well, that would be theft, but
there you go.
So we can safely call it that.
We can agree on that so far.
But that's not a good analogy, because what actually happens is I walk up to your lemonade stand and I pick up a glass of lemonade, and there's still a glass of lemonade sitting there on your lemonade stand. I mean, that's what we're really talking about here. Because there is no physical product that is being taken from you.
It's an idea. More than one person can have the same idea. I mean, one person can't own the same house.
In most cases, we're talking about ones and zeros, right? We're talking about software that's being copied and distributed, and you know, that is what the companies with all the money and the lawyers are trying to prevent is the movement of those bits from point A to point B.
But those bits took capital to create, whether right. It's you know, whether somebody's invested software money or somebody's artistic skills or right. Whatever that is.
And like, and I'm not trying to prevent them from profiting on those bits. But
if somebody takes their product and sells it in place of them or gives it away for free,
well,
isn't that?
But that's the medium. I mean, there, you know, to try to subvert that is to, you know, deny the reality of the way things are now. You know, copyright made sense back in the 18th century when everything had to have a physical manifestation. You know, the medium had to be there in order to convey the content. That's no longer the case.
Yeah.
So
it's gotten more complicated, certainly.
I just think the copyright law is an anachronism at this point. You know, it was always a manufactured right, like Ken said, and one of the flaws in our Constitution. But it's become unenforceable, given the level of technology that we have today.
So I just, music download industry, the proliferation of PDF products in places that used to use print medium, that's next to impossible to enforce. I mean, you don't have to go far on the internet to search and find all kinds of things that you would normally have to pay for in a brick and mortar store that you can get for free.
Right.
What are you saying? Just because there's thieving going on everywhere, that might as well stop trying to be cops?
No.
Like, is it just the proliferation of what I guess is currently taken to be an illegal act? Is just that it's happening a lot? Is that the reason?
Kudos to you for saying that word right the first time and
what did
not
I
having
say?
An Elmer Fudd moment like I did with proliferation.
Hey,
it's a hard
nailed
word.
It. Nailed it.
Yeah. Because I you know, as hobbies and stuff on the side, there's a lot of things I do that involve printed stuff, and certainly the internet has taken that over in a lot of ways, and PDFs, and you know, things are cheaper. There's direct, you know, point of sale stuff that you don't have to go through a distributor to a store, and it's, you know, and they're taking advantage of that and making higher margins, but at the same time it makes it very easy for me to upload a PDF file somewhere and let everybody have it for free. So, you know, by the current definition, that's piracy.
And
so,
what's wrong with that?
Well, I struggle with how innovation would work in a system where ideas can just be taken like that. Your incentive to innovate, because of what I said before with the little guy factor, I think you rule out an entire group of people from being able to capitalize on innovation. And you limit your number of people who are going to innovate, unless those people just love innovating and, I don't want to make any money off this. I just want to come up with this cool idea.
Well, there's always going to be people like that. I mean,
I think your number of people who are really, I mean, the part of innovation right now is the desire to make money. Say, I've got this idea and I'm going to make some scratch.
Right.
Okay.
And
there's
that's
nothing
good.
Preventing
that's great motivation.
That. There's nothing preventing that, even in the absence of copyright law. No,
I think there is.
It's more difficult.
I'd say it's a lot more difficult. So I come up with an idea, and I go to manufacturer X, and I pitch the idea, and they go, man, that is a great idea. But you know what? There's no market for that right now. And 2 weeks later, I'm in a store, and I see my product.
Well,
what would stop that?
That was your fault for not getting a non-disclosure agreement with the company when you went to pitch your idea.
Yeah.
Or... If you put out a software app, you know, say you put out the hot, some kind of super hot iPod app,
and, or like a flash game, let's say,
one could say, and you know, and it makes a bunch of, you know, it really catches on,
yeah.
But someone could just take that same binary and say, hey, I got this binary, I'm going to market the same thing, and do the advertising work if they have the money to do the advertising, and basically market the product that you created because it's out there on the net and binary.
How about movies or books? How would that work?
How would what work?
How would the intellectual property involved in a movie setting, you know, work? So I'll go geek for a minute. So George Lucas comes out with Star Wars in 1977. Man, the Star Wars thing is hot. There's going to be 400 sequels to this thing made by different people.
Yeah.
There were, but they just didn't come out. Fan fiction.
What would be wrong with that?
Well, I would think it would be a muddle and would be, you know, I don't know. I think it infringes upon his... It dilutes his intellectual property. Now, and if somebody comes out and makes a better Star Wars movie than George Lucas, you would say, well, George Lucas needs to make the best Star Wars sequel, and then his will be the definitive sequel. But I think it would just kill every good idea that comes out when people just glom onto it and beat it to death. And I don't know. I don't see that working very well. I think there's something to be said for protecting that intellectual property. I'm a fan.
But I really think more for the conservative mindset. It's a good little self-analysis. I think Jerry's more consistent with either a conservative or anarchistic kind of viewpoint on this topic, and you know maybe even aligns more with like kind of a hippie left sort of thing. Like information wants to be free, man. You know, but I think what Ken is speaking of is sounds like more of a traditional kind of a right wing conservative style viewpoint, but it does seem inconsistent with itself, I guess. I agree with what you're saying, Ken, but it doesn't seem the same as the way we treat other things that are like, let the market decide, and we don't need extra laws and government to decide what's right and wrong.
Maybe. So, I don't see it as inconsistent, I guess, but I can see where you're going with that.
But yeah, I mean, wouldn't you say that? Yeah.
I mean, I would not argue that my viewpoint is completely grounded in reality. It's grounded in an artificial reality that we've created that says this is how things should
work.
But
it's an artificial legal reality that
right.
think makes things better, which is rare, and you don't have a big list of those.
True.
Right.
But I will also agree that as you build upon that and put it together, that tower gets pretty precarious.
Well, right. And I would challenge whether it actually makes things better. Because for every Harry Potter book that makes $1 billion, there's some poor guy who's getting ramrodded by the RIAA because he downloaded an MP3.
Well, he shouldn't have done that.
Huh?
He shouldn't have downloaded that MP3.
Well, why not?
It's stealing.
It's not stealing. He didn't take anything.
So when J.K. Rowling, that's her name, she wrote the Harry Potter books.
That's not someone else's name. Thank you.
I'm just happy I got it right. So what she created, like when she created that and sold her books, I mean, is it really just simply the physical binding and paper that it's written on that there's no other value there?
So if somebody retypes Harry Potter.
That at all.
So what if? So could I just retype the thing and bind it myself and then sell it as a Harry Potter novel?
Well, I don't have a problem with you doing that because you did the work, right? You deserve to.
I did very little of the work.
He typed.
I typed. I'm pretty good at typing.
He words per minute it. But
okay, so maybe that book's not worth the same amount that the original was. I don't know.
But it's the exact same copy as the original. Well, oh, you mean like first edition, Rowling approved, certified?
Well, I'm just saying that it wouldn't be up to me, except as the consumer, to decide which of those books I'm going to buy. Am I going to buy the original from, you know, this publishing house over here that's charging me $15, or am I going to buy it from you out of the trunk of your car in the parking lot for $3?
Or am I going to download the PDF that the guy typed in and uploaded to the internet?
Yeah, for free.
Yeah.
Well, I may, you know, I'm pretty likely to download the PDF for free.
So why does J.K. Rowling ever write a book?
And not only that, how can you say that I've done the work? All I've done the work was to scan some stuff. I didn't write the novel.
You could put like story by J.K. Rowling, typing by Rob, whatever your last name is.
Right.
And oh man, I got to get that one typed by Rob. He types so good. He puts two spaces after his periods. I love that.
Really spreads the text.
See, and I think J.K. Rowling doesn't write a book. No one ever reads Harry Potter for precisely that reason, because there's no reason for her to write that book.
So
right.
You're saying that no one wrote a book in the world prior to there being copyright law.
I'm not saying no one. I'm saying the number of people that would do it would go down. The level of innovation would go down because the impetus to innovate is not there.
Well,
unless you just are – you've got a demon inside you that you have got to get it out. I've got to sit down and I've got to write, or I've got to make music, or I've got to make a movie because that's my passion.
I think there are plenty of those people out there.
And there may be, but I think there's people who do that now that would not do it under your model.
Well,
I like how this plays back with what Ken's saying with Solyndra. It all wraps back around because you're really talking about a legal structure put in place by the government to spur innovation, which is what this Solyndra was all
allegedly
about.
Allegedly spurs innovation. That's my allegation.
Yes.
Yeah, so, I mean, any facts to back this up. But.
Well, what I see it doing now is – trying to enforce this unenforceable law at this point just violates people's rights to privacy and so forth. And to me, it's not worth it. It's not worth the trade-off.
Electronic age has greatly, greatly muddied the waters on this.
Right.
Without a
doubt. But the concept...
I don't think they're muddy at all. I think it's crystal clear.
I think it's brought to the forefront that
it used to be muddy.
Construct is.
It used to be muddy. And now it's crystal clear that, you know, what we constructed before was a fiction and it doesn't work anymore. And we need to abandon it and find a model that does work. And there are plenty of them out there because those models existed prior to copyright. We just need to go back to them. You know,
what
we
would
need
those be?
Yeah, tell us.
Patronage. That's the main one. That if you download a book off the internet and you read it and you like it, you donate some money to the author, because what you're saying is, I like your product. I want you to make more of it. So here's some money.
And like NPR.
And the same thing. Exactly. The same thing is true for music, you know, anything, art.
What about corporate products? Like an iPod. Could you clone an iPod, make it look exactly the same, just reverse engineer it and then sell it for less and call it an iPod? Why not? No copyright on the name.
I think people do that, but I don't see that happening, because you're not talking about bits anymore. You're talking about physical stuff.
You're mostly concerned with bits and things that can be turned into bits.
Yeah.
Is that right? Okay.
I think for the most part, That's where the controversy is here. Because, you know, if you're talking about patents on physical objects, then, you know, the copying of those physical objects costs money. The incentive is just not as strong for people to copy those objects and sell them as it is for, you know, just copying bits, which requires no real work or capital or anything like that.
Hmm. So, but it seems like a big chunk of innovation in the last however many years, because we don't have a flying car yet, has been in bits and bytes. And you're saying that those bits and bytes should be based on a profit motive that's more on patronage or volunteering money. Not seeing it.
Well, you sounded like you were buying in for a second, and then you just
wow. I'm trying to
180. Restate it in my yeah, I hear what you're saying. Bigger. I think it's crap. All right.
And I think I will say, you know, that this is one of those issues that strikes me personally, because I have this crazy kind of urge that, like, I still feel like I can in my basement create something that could garner me wealth.
Yeah.
And I'm actively trying to, well, I'm not that active. It's kind of a lot
You're
of work.
Actively thinking about
I'm
it.
I'm actively coming up with bad ideas to do this.
Actively fantasizing that this might happen someday.
Right. But the whole idea of even thinking that relies on the fact that if I could create it, that I would own what I created. And that just because it's in a binary file and easy to copy with a computer, that it would still be mine legally. And if it wasn't mine, or I would have to just rely on somebody saying, well, this is the actual guy it came from, and so I'll pay my money to that guy. Like I would just
and I would bother. Say I would say that you've been misled.
Tell me how.
You've been sold a bill of goods, Rob. The
government, my dreams.
The government has convinced you that you own that thing and that you have an exclusive right to that thing.
What
that
if
idea.
I do own it. I want to own Angry Birds. Those Angry Birds guys are rich.
Are they rich? I hope they are. They should be rich.
They're more rich than me.
Yes, that's true.
And they're more rich than me because they created the little birdie game. And,
yeah.
And I'm not allowed to sell you that birdie game myself.
There's nothing stopping you.
There's the government stopping me.
Well, there's
evil
the
government.
There's the threat of somebody coming after you if you do it.
All right. That's what's
pretty good threat.
Yeah.
I'm gonna heed that threat.
I don't like people coming after me. I'm more of a sit in the basement trying to create a app.
Well, here's the problem with that on a fundamental level, is that, you know, if you want to go back to the Constitution, which I don't generally do because, you know, I don't agree with it. But, you know, if that's going to be the basis of this argument, then go to Article 1, Section 10, where the right to freely contract is outlined. And if, you know, if you and I are allowed to contract between the two of us without any interference from the state, which is what it says in there, then if you and I agree to this exchange of the quote unquote illicit material of, you know, MP3s or software or books or movies or whatever the bits are that we're exchanging, somebody else has to violate our rights in order to enforce those archaic laws. They either have to violate your right to freely contract, or they have to violate your right to privacy to even find out that the transaction occurred.
Yeah, but right. if the transaction involves something illegal, whether you agree with the something that's illegal, if I contract with you to murder someone, that you can't. I don't know how that's not illegal.
No, I would agree. It's, but you know,
well, this isn't murder. You're still doing something that, by the law, such as it is now, is illegal. So how do you find out about the contract without violating?
Murder is wrong because it violates the right of the person you're murdering. Mm-hmm. It's not wrong because there is a law that says it's wrong.
Well, but under our system, it is wrong because there's a law that says it's wrong. That's how we identify the things that are wrong.
No, that's not how we identify the things that are wrong. That's how we identify the things that are against the law or illegal.
Okay, all right.
But okay, things that are illegal are not necessarily immoral.
I think spandex on fat people is wrong, but there's no law against that. So
I would agree with that.
There you go. So, okay, we'll be very particular about our language. So if you make a contract for something that is against the law, is that contract valid? You may not agree with the law, but can the law not infringe upon that contract if it's for something that's against the law?
Well, I don't know that that any contract by itself could be immoral. Now, if the contract is to carry out an immoral act, then the person who actually carries out that act is doing something immoral. But the contract itself is not.
Hmm. Hmm. So what does one do about such a thing?
I mean, I would point to the fugitive slave laws that we used to have in this country mm-hmm. as an example.
Yeah. I was going to go there next. What about if a law is, okay, it's a law, but
right.
it's an unjust law.
Exactly.
And then you get into a very shaky area there.
No, you don't. You get into a very, very clear area where there's a higher standard that dictates whether or not an act is immoral. And you can ignore the law because the law is just muddying the waters.
But there's going to be, you have to acknowledge that there's going to be some pain there. It's not going to be like one day somebody's going to do something to violate that law and somebody's going to go, oh, we've been so stupid. This law is clearly incorrect. I mean, there's going to be a buildup of time in between there where people are going to be persecuted and jailed and gone after before that
exactly.
law gets overturned.
And we're living in those times right now when it comes to copyright law.
So you think you foresee a time 5 years, 10 years, 20 years from now where people are going to go, oh, remember when we had copyrights? That was quaint.
Yes, that's okay. Inevitable.
Hmm.
And the sooner we embrace that reality, the better off we will all be.
I see what you're saying about the way technology has changed and made things easier to transmit, that it's muddying the waters, and I think you're drawing the conclusion that perhaps the laws that are trying to enforce those rules shouldn't even be there. I see the general trend you're saying. I guess I just don't leap to the conclusion that you're getting to.
I mean, you can see a fundamental shift in the wind, right? I mean, you've got internet sales up, you've got brick and mortar stores closing, borders closing. You know, you've got all these things that are happening that are clearly a departure from the way things have been. You know, when you go to buy music, you don't go to you know,
a record store.
Yeah, you know, those don't hardly exist anymore. They exist in malls, and even that's going away.
Right.
So you go to iTunes and you download something, and so now you've got digital rights management, which I'm sure you're not in favor of.
No.
So, you know, although, but then if digital rights management goes away, then
I would say that digital rights management, if it were implemented in a free market kind of way, that would be a possible alternate solution to this so-called problem. I would not personally buy anything that was being managed that way.
But you would have that choice.
But yeah.
You're so picky. You want to choose everything. Gosh. So you're saying iTunes could do their digital rights management thing and some other carrier provider could say, I'm not going to do that, and you could choose to buy me instead.
Right.
Which I think is that way with software right now.
Which is what I do right now. That is actually a big
discriminator of software, because there are places that do that do heavy copyright protection and other software companies that do not.
Right.
And especially in the era where now you don't go into a Best Buy necessarily to buy a computer game. You might download it. So places are doing things to protect themselves. And I've certainly seen things where people, you know, there's different kinds of protections that are out there. And game companies will buy those from a service to, hey, protect my stuff.
Right.
Star Force was one that was big for a while. But it seems like as they come and go, people get really annoyed by how intrusive they are, and some people will say, hey, I'm not going to buy your software as long as you have this protection on it because it messes with my hardware. I can't uninstall stuff properly. You know, there's issues with this.
Yeah, or
when
like
I uninstall
Sony,
it from this machine and I go to install it on another machine, your game tells me I've already been installed somewhere. Well, but I already took it off this other machine, so your stuff's not keeping track of that properly. I think TurboTax went through a big hoop-de-doo about this a couple years ago, didn't they? They used to have like an unlimited use thing where I could buy TurboTax and I could get together with you guys and say, hey, let's split the price three ways and I'll do the free federal e-file and you guys won't get it, but we'll have a cheaper price for TurboTax. So they instituted something where you could only install it on one machine and their sales just tanked. And tax cuts sales went up. So guess what TurboTax did the next year? They got rid of their protection and say, oops, sorry, because I got an email, you know, because as a former buyer from their CEO saying, really sorry about that whole thing. Can we forget about that and you can buy our stuff again? So
yeah,
that would be your market at work, I guess, right?
Yeah.
If tax cut says, hey, you can unlimited number of people can use this thing as long as you only have it on one machine at a time, and TurboTax says, no, we're gonna manage our digital rights on this thing.
The same thing happened with Sony when they did their digital rights management on it ended up being a rootkit that got installed on your machine. So I mean, it was akin to a virus, you know, or a Trojan piece of software. It was something that was getting installed on your machine that basically gave Sony control over your entire computer.
Ah.
Just so that they could prevent you from, you know, quote, illegally copying their stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And there was such an uproar over that Sony has abandoned the entire DRM thing. I mean, they're done with it.
So where your issue comes in, though, is if I'm selling a Milli Vanilli song, no matter who sells that, they will be required to put some kind of digital rights management on it by the law. Is that a true statement? Because the people that own that song are going to insist on that because they can.
Yeah. I mean, I think if that option were available to them, they would probably do that. Yeah.
But yeah, is there some kind of middle ground where you wouldn't have to have a single outlet like with record stores? You got, you know, Sony. Talk about Sony as a record distributor, and they're the only ones that can put out this CD. Well, we don't have that anymore. We have a lot of ways to get different things. And I'm not opposed to torrents or wherever, whatever it takes to get my stuff out there. I just want it to be my stuff. Like you're talking about TurboTax and paying for subscriptions, and obviously they screwed that whole thing up. But that's a big leap from there to saying, well, I can just sell TurboTax myself.
Right.
as my own product because I bought it one time.
Yep.
I think those are that's a leap that I'm not seeing yet.
I'm not comfortable taking.
Well, what is it that, I mean, how is it that you see they are harmed by you making a copy of their software? Or because making multiple copies of their software?
Because the whole point of the business is to sell that product to consumers.
Understood.
And so if somebody else takes my product and sells it to consumers in my stead, then that's where I'm
so if 20 million people use TurboTax but only one copy got bought because they all passed it around, guess what there's not going to be next year?
Okay.
TurboTax.
Yeah, but that assumes that all things being equal, that those 20 million people would have ponied up the money and bought it legally.
Mm-hmm. It does.
And that is not true.
I would agree with that, yes. But more than one would have bought it.
Perhaps, but you know,
I agree with you.
It's not a controlled experiment, as you're fond of saying. We don't have an alternate universe in which that could be tested.
I wish we did use an alternate universe. Yes. No, you're right. And I would even argue one thing that I've seen a trend in that I think is interesting is there's free downloads out there of things that then will prompt people to actually buy something that they might have otherwise not bought.
Right.
And that's something Minecraft. That would have never happened before.
Look at Minecraft. Are you guys familiar with Minecraft?
No. Tell us.
It started out as it's a game. It started out free, and I don't know if it's still free or if he's just suggesting a donation now. But I mean, there's like 75 million people who have downloaded this game now, and you know, even if they all just give the guy a dollar. How many dollars
would that be?
I don't know.
This isn't a math blog.
Let me get out my calculator.
We'll do a math podcast another time. Let's not confuse our listeners.
Right. So there is a market motivation for free software.
Yeah,
when
there is.
Free.
It's a different market than we're used to using. And I would say there's a certain amount of paranoia in scaredness and comfort, you know, with the old system that makes people not want to go to the new system. And I will confess to being one of those people because I think it does protect something that is worthy of protecting. Maybe it needs to be modified, but I still like the little guy part of this thing that you can make something and have an idea that can be yours and that can be protected and that can be parlayed into something because you don't have all the resources available to you to get it from start to finish. And maybe if you were more savvy and you had a buddy who did legal stuff and you knew what an NDA was, maybe you could navigate those waters. But average Joe is not going to navigate those waters because...
Well, average Joe's not going to navigate those waters under the current system. I mean, if he's got an idea, he's just as likely to get screwed out of that idea under the current system.
But he's more likely under the new system, I think.
Right, there wouldn't even be a screw. It would just be.
It's true. You're right, and I would contend that less ideas will happen because of that.
Right,
your ideas will be centered down on a very narrow group of people.
Well, yeah, I just don't think that it would necessitate a change in people's mindsets. I mean, it would be a paradigm shift, if you will, because people would no longer think With the dollar signs in their eyes, they would not think that, hey, this is pretty good. I'm going to sell a million of these. You know, that would not be the first thought. Their first thought is, hey, I need to find somebody who will market this for me and I'll sell it to them for, you know, $100,000.
Right.
And then I'm done because after that, I no longer control it. It's like, you know, it's like pissing in a river. You can't get it back once it's out there.
I've never tried, so I can't vouch for that, but I suspect you're right.
You've never done it?
Never tried to get it back.
That's good.
That is good. Sounds like it would have been a waste of my time.
I'm pretty sure it would be.
I don't know. Maybe I'm scared of the change, but I see a shift that would be... It would be... more damaging in the short term, certainly. Maybe it would shake out to something. I don't know that it would be better. I don't know. I don't see it.
Yeah, well, you know what? Maybe the premise of this whole thing is wrong, and maybe inventors are not supposed to make a living off of their inventions.
Why not? That's my
whole
plan.
Maybe musicians are not supposed to make enough money to live on.
I want to.
Well, that's great. I want to fly, too. But, you know, maybe I'm not supposed to fly. That's why I don't have wings.
So would you have the Beatles if they wouldn't have made money off their music?
I don't know.
I don't think you would have. But then you wouldn't have had Yoko Ono. So this isn't a good argument. I need to come up with a different line on this. But yeah, I don't know.
The Beatles wanted to get their ideas out there, but they
wouldn't have Nickelback.
Hey, now you're talking.
Yeah.
Look at this photograph.
Ooh, please don't do that again.
God, I hate that song.
I don't know. I think you'd miss out on some stuff. And you're saying that's okay. You'd miss out on some stuff. You'd get something else. And you wouldn't know any different.
Right. I mean, if you, and I've done this, if you find a musician that you liked, you send him some money. You say, hey, you know, I enjoyed listening to your stuff. Here's some money.
I don't think a lot of people would do that.
I think a lot more would do it than you
well,
think.
Well, and I Possible. Look... Well, you look at what Radiohead did. I mean, Radiohead put out their last two albums online, free, and with a donation on there. And then what did they say? They said they made. Oh, now I can't remember which way it went. If they made
more
money, or
we won't know.
But they made more money. That what they said is that going that way, they made less money, but they sold more records, and they were happy with that. And that wow. they probably made a larger, of course it's all profit then because they got out of their
right.
record
right.
contract.
Exactly.
So they were plenty happy with that. But if they didn't go through the system of owning what Radiohead was before then, you know, they'd just be
That's what I was gonna say. Nobody would know who Radiohead was.
Right.
If they
just
weren't
be a
Radiohead, so.
Just be some dudes up on another website saying, check out my hot tracks.
Probably another band out there just as good as Radiohead that's got their little website that's got three hits on it because the three band members' moms went to it to make them feel better and nobody knows who they are.
Hey, does that happen with the podcast?
I think it does. I think we're living that.
So maybe we actually are the most insightful political commentary in the world.
We could double our downloads if we all got our mothers to do it, too.
Yeah, should. Right.
My mom doesn't know how to download, so.
Yeah, neither does mine.
Yeah, that's the great part is we can make fun of them and they'll never know here. This is beautiful. Yeah, I'm having a tough time going with the vision. I see the vision, but I'm more
concerned about you, Ken. I think Jerry's got a consistent viewpoint that seems to match with my – I think I'm consistently lefty because I want to change the world through music. But I think
– Not through your singing, I hope.
You want to buy the world a Coke?
Because that would change the world.
Make it a better place.
Oh, stop.
But, yeah, I think Ken's got the most like internal discord. Talking about using laws and government constructs to spur innovation.
I'm
a big fan of it, but it doesn't seem to jive with the rest of what
I am a man of many varied opinions. I do not confine myself to one rigid hard line of thinking.
Like a kaleidoscope of confusion.
Yeah. A cornucopia of ideas. I mean, I believe in the power of law, so it's a matter of whether you agree that law is reasonable or not. So,
right. And I just don't want people taking my hot app that I'm working on. I mean, I got like 1,900 hits on my last one.
Did you really?
Well, total of out of like four things. Okay, it wasn't that many. I think my total hits.
I'm confused now.
Are like 2,200 total out of four products.
Okay.
Fast track. Look out. Here I come.
It's 2,200 more than I've gotten. So
yeah,
but I still think I can do it because I think when I put out my fifth thing, that it's going to be it. Just
and that's
could
what makes
be,
you want to put out the fifth.
Thing. Exactly that.
Not that you're going to put out the fifth thing and it's going to be awesome, and the Angry Birds guy are going to see it and go, "Hey, that's a great idea. We should do it." And then everybody's going to download the Angry Birds guy's version of your thing.
Right, right. That would that if that hap- if I knew that was just instantly going to happen because
what's
of,
the point?
I wouldn't even be worried about a fifth thing.
So you wouldn't do it just for the fun of doing it? You're only doing it for the money or the potential money?
The hope, the dream.
It's a little hope and dream of money, but I know the hope and dream is futile, so it's really more for fun.
Hope and change is money, though.
That's right.
Yeah.
Change in my pocket. Yeah.
I think you'd lose some percentage of innovation there.
Right. I am at least in part motivated by the idea that I could use skills to create something that would be my own that would make me dollars or euros, whatever it is. Gold bullion.
Ameros.
The world currency.
The world currency. Oh, I can't wait for that. It's coming. We should do another show on that.
The world currency?
The UN, the conspiracy of the world government. Rob will blow a gasket. It'll be great.
Our listeners let us down last week. They didn't suggest any topics for us to discuss.
Yeah, that's true.
So we need your input.
We're gonna be like that guy on the commercial that says he's done with the internet. He's gone through everything and he's just finished.
Yeah, you have reached the end of the internet.
Sorry, you're done. All right, covered it all. Hopefully by the next time we chat, there'll be another new Republican front runner that we can rail on.
Yeah.
Probably will. Yeah, it'll be a whole other week, right?
And we're also making plans for a live episode on location.
I saw a great suggestion for a location on Facebook.
Yeah. You did, huh?
I did. I might have made it. I can't be sure.
So somebody hacked your account.
Yes. Hate that. Hate those guys. Yes.
So we'll take suggestions for topics or locations.
Locations, sure.
Yes. And we would love to have our listeners join us on location so we have like a live studio audience that we can record in front of.
Can we do that? Do we have to like arrange something with the place we're going? Or would you like talk to the manager and say, hey, we're going to come record this awesome podcast at your facility?
I don't see that we need to make any special arrangements, but
they might give us free food or something.
They might if we mention them on the air.
There, ooh, good, yes. All right, I'm in.
All right,
jalapeno poppers for me.
Well, hey, have you come up with a location yet?
No, I was thinking, you know, we'd just go to like a Starbucks or something, someplace that was relatively quiet, not a lot of background noise.
Okay.
I'll have a lot of lefties there, too, getting their frappuccinos.
Right.
That's true. Jerry and I will not be popular, except for my inconsistent stance on copyright and patent law.
You'll be a big hit with the crowd.
Yes, I'll stick with that topic.
It's a very populist position.
I can't believe we got through this whole show and you did not say your Thomas Jefferson quote one time. I am horribly disappointed. Please say it.
You mean about the candle?
Yes.
Well, I'll finish it up. I'll finish it up with that.
All right. I feel better. I didn't think I was going to have to prompt you. I'm just horribly disappointed, but that's okay. I'll get over it. So what did we conclude here? I'm inconsistent. Jerry's consistent, and Rob.
I'm just standard.
He's just right down centrist.
I'm just the normal opinion. I think I'm the majority opinion.
Which is what is the majority opinion?
I think me and you are the majority opinion. I think we're in agreement.
Is that because people agree, or because they don't know anything different, or they've never thought about it? I don't think people think about stuff like this, right?
I think people understand when they're buying a book that they're not just buying. That they're buying that artist's creation,
yeah,
and that they understand that transaction is going to give money to to that artist.
Yeah.
That it's not just a bunch of pages.
So go download a BitTorrent client. Now, there's obviously a lot of people that know that and don't care, right?
Right, right.
Sticking not that the three of man. Us would ever engage in such behavior because, you know, that would be wrong. But I hear other people do.
I hear there's something like that.
I've heard rumor that if you bring up like a BitTorrent client that you'll see millions of people online downloading things.
Almost yeah, like so. A torrent of bits.
All right.
And I think until recently when Netflix supplanted them, BitTorrent was the biggest amount of traffic on the internet as a whole.
Well, then that brings up an interesting point. Is Netflix, is streaming a way to control that in some way? Or does that not really get you around the problem completely? Because you can record something that you're streaming, right? So
I think they've done a reasonable job of making that difficult enough that most people don't want to do it.
Okay.
But I don't know. There might be people out there who have gotten around, you know, they use something called Silverlight right now for handling the client side. And as far as I know, there's no way to record the stream as it's coming down. But maybe there is. I don't know. Maybe our listeners know more about that than I do. But
yeah, I mean, I agree that the whole the electronic age has definitely changed the game. So now you get into a mode, much like with, you know, a lot of other things that we've talked about, that as that shift happens, you have to alter or expand the way the law works in order to encompass all these things. And it's right. A house of cards. I mean, there's no question it's a house of cards. And you just can't police everything. And I know people that own intellectual property and who run companies based on that, and they're obviously very protective of that because they make a livelihood based on it right now. And I can't fault them for that.
Right.
But under a system where they would get that stolen, there's no benefit to them, you know, or their benefit goes down. Or maybe they wrongly think that their earnings would go down, and maybe they really wouldn't. I don't know. I can download something for free and I don't have to pay for it, I'm probably going to do that. So I think there's money that I spend now that I maybe wouldn't if I didn't have to pay for it. But I will also say that under the electronic revolution, there's things I can get for free that I can sample that I would otherwise not have bought because I never would have been exposed to it. And now I am. And so those people are making my money because they do give away a certain amount of things for free.
Right. Yeah, I've seen
that. So the people
that
embrace that, if their stuff is good, they're going to sell. So, you know, I guess you would say, hey, if your stuff is good, you don't have to have anything to fear from a system where your intellectual property isn't protected. But I think if it's just freewheeling, anybody does anything, I think you do dilute intellectual property. And I guess, what do you do with that? Maybe nothing. But I think there's something to be said for protecting that.
Well, I think you will eventually reach the realization that there is no such thing as intellectual property. And here's the Jefferson quote.
Ah, whew.
Big finale.
As Secretary of State, Thomas Jefferson ran the first patent office. And for him, its purpose was to promulgate inventions, not to protect them. He hated monopolies and was determined that the patent process shouldn't serve it. The peculiar character of an idea, said Jefferson, is that no one possesses the less because everyone possesses the whole of it. He who receives an idea from me receives it without lessening me, as he who lights his candle at mine receives light without darkening me. So there you go.
It's a good one.
That's deep.
What did he know?
Yeah.
Jefferson.
That guy.
That's right.
That guy.
He was such a hack. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And make sure you check us out on Facebook, facebook.com/MidwestPeace. And we will see you next week.
Bye now.
Yo ho, yo ho, a pirate's life for me. We pillage, we plunder, we rifle and loot. Drink up, me hearties, yo ho. We kidnap and ravage and don't give a hoot. Drink up, me hearties, yo ho.
Yo ho, yo ho, a pirate's life for me. We extort, we pilfer, we filch and sack. Drink up, me hearties, yo ho. Maraud and embezzle and even hijack. Drink up, me hearties, yo ho. Yo ho, yo ho, a pirate's life for me.